in which criminal charges were brought, but in which there were no convictions. Meanwhile, in terms of the agency's own internal reviews, they set up a national use of force review board. But if you look at any public report, any report that that review board has made public, they have found, you know, all of the incidents, all of the incidents in accordance with standing policy at the time. Although some of those incidents have actually compelled the agency to even change their policy regarding, you know, firing at shooting vehicles and regarding, you know, allegedly thrown objects. And so, you know, there's very little accountability that we can tell has taken place.
I wanted to bring Astrid back into the conversation. Astrid Dominguez, talk about the new ACLU report detailing the widespread abuse and neglect of unaccompanied immigrant children detained by border agents during the Obama administration. The ACLU uncovering documents detailing verbal, physical, sexual abuse of migrant children, the denial of clean drinking water, adequate food, failure to provide necessary medical care, detention and freezing, unsanitary conditions. Can you talk about what further you found and what you're demanding?
This report was published last week. As you well stated, these are documents that the agency provided that go from 2009 to 2014. The agency provided to over 30,000 pages of internal documents of complaints that have been placed against CBP from children abusers. And this is, I mean, the stories are appalling. There are stories from kids claiming that the agents not only beat them, but also psychologically mistreated them, calling them dogs, threatening them with rape or, you know, they were going to let them die. The kids were refused basic necessities, just like you mentioned, like water, food. A girl was sexually assaulted. An agent opened up her legs and touched her so hard that she screamed. And these documents are on our website at the ACLU.
So we only have 30 seconds, but what you're calling for in those cases and in the case of Claudia?
So first of all, what we need, it's an investigation. We need to know that these types of abuses are not happening anymore. Even though this was during the Obama administration, we ought to make sure that CBP has changed and that these abuses are not currently happening. Second of all, the oversight agencies over CBP, which is the OIG, the Office of Inspector General, the Civil Rights, Civil Liberties Office, their internal affairs, should also have greater powers to make sure that agents are held accountable for their actions and that these abuses no longer happen to kids who are in Border Patrol custody.
I want to thank you both very much for being with us. Astrid Dominguez, director of the ACLU's Border Rights Center, speaking to us from Houston, and Sarah McAray, award-winning investigative journalist, contributor to The Guardian,
fresh,
speaking to
cold
us from
or
St.
Warm.
Louis.
I'm if Amy it's Goodman, not clear, it can make...
This is Democracy Now! See part one of our discussion. Go to Democracy.
Cold or warm. If it's not clear, it can make you sick. Animals, trees, insects, and plants use it too. What is it? It's air. That substance that none of us can live without. The National Wildlife Federation is doing its part in America's quest for a healthy environment. You can too. Don't pollute the environment. Our survival is at stake.
The Audubon Adopt-A-Refuge program needs volunteers at the Quagg Wildlife Refuge. Your help is needed for activities such as reorganizing their library, preparing mailings, trimming trail paths, and other additional duties. Call Evelyn at 631-727-0417. The Kaler's Pond Nature Center at Santa Mariches also needs helpers for activities including trail guides, fundraising assistants, field trip coordinators, and landscapers. Call Jean at 878-2046.
And it's 1 minute after 6 o'clock. You're tuned in to WUSB in Stony Brook. It's time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. It's WUSB's own Bob Longman on drums there.
He's incredible.
He does it every week and makes it sound exactly the same.
I don't know how he practices or where he gets this from.
Oh, he's really working up a sweat there.
Well, it's summertime.
It is. All right.
Oh, that's the best part.
Good. Yeah. Go get a drink of water there. That was something. It's always something to watch. I'm
nice
sorry people
Bob.
Can't see it. I wish we were video sometimes.
Well, it wouldn't be the same. It's really about the audio. And I know that Bob, as a drummer, would really want the music to stand for itself.
A drummer. Wow. Listen to you. He's the drummer.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway.
Performer.
Yeah. Enough about us. Enough about the amazing people here at WUSB, Stony Brook. Mm-hmm. 90.1 FM and 107.3. We have all kinds of things to talk about this week on this edition of Off the Wall. The browser loaded. How about that? You know, I started. We need a new Mac, people. If you have a new Mac, please. I hit the button to load the browser at the beginning of the theme. It only now just loaded. Oh, wow. Okay, so I'm gonna go to a website. Those are those things that give you information. It'll take a while for that to load.
So
maybe by the end of the show.
You're going to use a universal resource locator?
That's what that stands for. Thank you. Wow. URL. How about that?
Isn't that something?
Check out the brains on Kyle.
Yeah, well...
Did we introduce ourselves?
I'm just getting warmed up. This is Off the Wall. That's your host, Emmanuel, and I'm the guest, Kyle.
Why are you the guest? You're as much of a host as me at this point.
Well... I mean, there's just so much responsibility in hosting and, dare I say, engineering.
The legal papers come in, it's always got my name on the top, I know, but
there's
still.
There's a certain amount of grit, the too many cooks in the kitchen type thing.
FCC fines, that sort of, yeah, okay, yeah. No, I understand, you're looking out for yourself, that's a smart thing to do.
These are the days.
Yeah.
These are the times we live in. And you have to be prepared. You have to be, watch your back. It's
speaking of paying the price for what you say.
Holy moly. I know exactly what you're talking about. I know everybody in here.
Can't say holy moly on the air. Kyle, look at the note.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I can't. That's one of the phrases.
Wow.
Yeah, don't.
Did you realize the squirrel is up by the vent?
Okay, you scared the hell out of me because there is a squirrel on top of the speaker there, but it's a doll. But,
yeah.
But I really thought for a second that was a... I don't know why you were so calm about it.
Yes.
Wow, there is a squirrel. Because in the old studios, we did have a squirrel problem, a real squirrel problem, where our wires are being chewed. The squirrel is actually seen in the studio sometimes. And, well, you know, they're not the cleanest of animals, but something a radio station shouldn't have to deal with.
Yeah, I didn't mean to change the subject.
And now we made it cute. You know, we have little dolls, and we even, put it into our program guide.
I would say it's a mascot. We have pledge levels. You can donate at the squirrel level when we do that, but we're not doing that today. No, today we're talking about what everyone else is talking about, what everyone is so aghast, so surprised at.
The R word.
The hit show, Roseanne, not to be confused with Roxanne.
There was no hit show called Roxanne.
No, but...
It's a hit song called Roxanne.
It's a
Roxanne.
Name. It's a pronoun.
It's
the eponymous, the famous, the infamous Roseanne show has been canceled. The reboot did not boot.
Well, it booted. It booted just fine. I mean...
It has crashed.
It was popular. It was their most popular show. It even beat out this week with George Stephanopoulos.
Sorry, temperature has turned up to 80 in here. This is just too hot.
It is pretty hot, but there's a hot topic. Again, the power of Twitter. Roseanne, I don't know if she was on a bender or what, but she just came out with this vile racist tweet today, and inside of a couple of hours, she was gone. The whole unfortunately, it's not just her. It's a lot of other people involved. It's the entire production team. They're gone. The entire cast and crew. It's, the effects were quick. The results were quick.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the collective impact that pirating had on the production industry. Mm-hmm. All those jobs lost. It's probably the equivalent. Roseanne's a big show. And, maybe I'm exaggerating, of course, but it is amazing. She basically was handed the nails and the hammer, climbed up on the cross, crucified herself... And removed herself, her own mouth pounded those nails in.
Sorry, did he step over the line? I'm getting signals from the other room. Yeah, I think the religious references, the self-mutilation, is that
are those
else?
Categories still
attack attack on Christianity? That's yeah.
I'm sorry.
Don't do that.
Sorry, it was
land us in a pile of hot water.
My illustrative tongue strikes again. But that's the point.
We're sorry.
Her speech, however repugnant, has been redirected. It is embroiled itself in a backlash that came to bite her right back, right in the bank account.
Yeah.
We're talking big production company. And folks, ABC brought her to the table. ABC made her the fascist phoenix that she is. She was dusted off and brought back from the ashes of her career.
Mm-hmm.
She was always festering, kind of like, I don't know, a boil of some sort. But she rose again to this stature, even, you know, lauded, whatever. They needed this. They wanted to cash in on her market, on that blue-collar wave. And they made a gamble.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like the chips have fallen, and they had to cut her loose, basically. And that is what has transpired.
Wait,
so,
I don't like the thought of her loose. Basically, she can cause all kinds of harm in all sorts of other places. But, yeah, I guess that's kind of what we have now.
Well, what do you think? It's going to be picked up on, like, the Hallmark Channel or something?
Who would... Even Fox News, when I saw Fox News today, I do check in on with them occasionally, they were unanimously condemning what she said. And you know it's bad when Fox News is condemning you. You know that.
Yeah. If you haven't read, basically she was describing a former aide, in a previous administration, and, you know, making animal references. I don't really need to say more. Not a good look. Not a really good comparison. Not the most heady analysis or Twitter observation that ever was. Kind of a lame comment, just really, who knows what she was thinking, but it did not land well.
And yet, we know that probably within a couple of hours, if not already, people on the far right will be defending her in one way or another. Maybe pointing to something that someone else said in a different political sphere that was not met with the same outrage. And for a good reason, too. I don't think you can get any more textbook racist than this. It'll be very interesting to see what people come up with to try and defend her. I am really looking forward to Trump tweets because he's giving an address in, of all places, Tennessee. We love Tennessee. We were there twice in the last year, and you know, people there are great. But there is a certain element that how should I say this can kind of. Propel him to just speak his mind. That's kind of what I'm hoping to see today. I'm kind of hoping to see what he says about this. And anything short of universal condemnation from him is certainly not going to be enough. And even universal condemnation from him, I don't think will be enough. But I'm looking forward to it. I really am.
Yes, join us later for Off the Meds, our our live coverage here at WUSB of the president's rally / campaign, God knows what.
Why is he going to tennis? I mean, what's the purpose?
Because this is more important than golf, I guess. But yeah, expect the shade throwing to join all of the parades. Look at them. Look at them trotting out, all of those lovely apologists falling over themselves. Look at it, one after the other. How can we defend the grand wizard here,
well,
Donald, out there in Tennessee? Good job. Let's see it. I can't wait. It's going to be great TV. Prime time.
Well, you know, I watched the Roseanne show. I think you did as well.
We did. We gave it a go.
And honestly, I didn't have any problem with Roseanne Conner. I didn't. She was a Trump supporter in the show. And I think she was a bit racist in the show. But, you know, a lot of people are. It doesn't mean that they're you can't reach them. And I was seeing in some of the scripts, which, you know, she didn't write the scripts. At least she didn't write all of it. She definitely had input. But there issues were addressed, and I think issues should be addressed. And she was not made to look very good, I don't think, because there are a lot of other characters in the program. So I thought, you know, it was a good dialogue. It was a good point where people could hash out issues. The problem, the poison, was Roseanne Barr. That was the poison. If it was just a, you know, a show with a character who had these views expressed them in one way or another, I think that would be fine. And, you know, watching that, trying to you know, keep out of my mind who the person behind it really was difficult. But, you know, I tried. I made the best effort I could. And I thought there were good issues that were brought up. I thought there were good characters that were entered, you know, into the dialogue, that it's a shame that they won't be around. Unless maybe they kill her off. Okay, bear with me here. They did this with Valerie Harper. There's a show called Valerie. And in the second season, she wanted more money. She wanted to, I don't know, be paid like half what the male people were being paid, something outrageous like that. And they said, no, we're not having that. And they killed her off. They killed her off in a show that was named after her. And so the program after that was called, I think, Valerie's Family or the Hogan Family. I think it got named twice. It actually was successful after that. So you can do it. So maybe Roseanne's family, I don't know. Think about, you know, ABC, maybe you can do something like, or simply recast her. That would really piss her off. Have another person playing Roseanne. I think that might work as well. Failing that, you have a half hour. How about The Last Man on Earth? Move that over there, because they got canceled.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, I think some of these shows are probably not as good a replacement. You are right in that it was an astute way of tying in the current regime, the current, popular sentiments division, of course, mm-hmm. the tribalism we're currently living through. But I think... you know, it's going to be very hard. I don't know where, if you saw this, but some of the writers actually are leaving, or were, you know, none of them are going to be writing
but
now.
Wanda Sykes was
one of the most outspoken of the team,
and that's,
that was put together, and that I think is the group of people that contributed to it being able to navigate. And you saw it in the storyline and some of the writing, as you said, that it was attempting to navigate this climate.
The fact that they had Wanda Sykes as a writer, I think that surprises a lot of people, but that shows me that you know, they had a good team and they were addressing issues. And I think, you know, we cannot shy away from that. We have to recognize there are lots of people out there that support Trump and his way of doing things. And they need to be part of the dialogue. You can't just shut them out and pretend they don't exist. That's very unhealthy, and that's how they get more power, because you think they're not there when they are. But having somebody like her running things, or even being a part of things today, that just it became too much. And it's funny too. On this day where Starbucks is closed everywhere because of racial sensitivity training. What a day for this to happen. We passed by a couple of Starbucks, actually, on the way over here, just to see what was going on. And it's funny, because there's a line of people trying to get in. They can't get in. And we looked inside one, and there was a group of people, maybe about a dozen people, having a spirited discussion around a table, which I guess is exactly what you're supposed to do. We went to another, and there was nobody there. But I think that might have been because it was 5:30, and they had been at it for 3 hours, and maybe they solved all their issues. Who knows?
Or went out to lunch or something.
Go to your local Starbucks and see what's going on right now. It might be interesting. Might be illuminating.
Yeah, just loiter. See what happens, you know?
That's the whole point. No, okay.
Forget it.
It's not about loitering. It's about you know, being treated with respect. And, you know, I think they're doing the right thing. I know there's people who will criticize no matter what you do and say it's not enough. Okay, but this is more than I expected them to do. Basically, it was, you know, a stupid employee that did a stupid thing calling the cops on those guys in Philadelphia that did not reflect company policy that I'm aware of. And to close down for an entire afternoon and make sure all their employees get it, and pointing themselves out as, yeah, we're part of the problem, I think that's something we should acknowledge. And hopefully it doesn't happen again. And they're not the only people out there. This happens everywhere you can think of.
Yeah, especially a place that's dealing with the public so closely, you know, with like retail establishments and so on. These things are they're very small things that maybe your average employee does not realize they they're I guess perpetuating on a daily basis. And I think it doesn't really hurt much. A lot of the coverage was like, oh, Starbucks is going to lose $12 million or whatever in lost revenue because they're doing this. But can it really hurt any organization? I mean, imagine I mean, if you look at it just purely financially, the suits and harm to communities that are avoided by dealing with this so that you don't have incidences where people are hurt or come back and, you know, have grievances with the city or whatever kind of escalation that ought not to be in the first place. So it really, I don't even think it should be a bottom line thing. I don't think that's the way Starbucks is acting. Even if this is a token or like a symbolic thing, they really will cover it. They really, really will talk about it with employees who have a very close proximity with the public, and Starbucks, whatever you might think about it, is way more of an institution with the public than people realize. I mean, a lot of people hang out there. A lot of people spend time there. There are many of them around the world. They are a huge, huge franchise, a huge chain.
Don't I know it?
And I think a small step, but really in the grand scheme of corporations and the pervasiveness, you know, if the West is going to export this kind of service or brand, you know, we should have the values that come with it. And, you know, there are other brands, I think, that could benefit from this kind of thing, too.
All brands can benefit from this, and everybody should be looking at themselves, the institutions they work for. To see how they are dealing with this. It's funny because everyone thinks they're not the problem. Everyone thinks that they've got it covered. You'd be surprised. When you take a good look, when you hold yourself up to scrutiny, and when you get perspective from other people, you'll see things that will surprise you. And I speak from experience. I speak from just being observant to all the things going on.
It's
a lot we have to learn.
It's every day. It's everyday work. It's work you have to do with yourself, whether it is a racial bias or socioeconomic disparity or gender issues. All of that stuff is something that you need to commit to learning for life, because these things are evolving. They've changed a lot, and attitudes. You know, there are perspectives and attitudes on this stuff that I think people need to expose themselves to gain some perspective and help them navigate modern life and society as it is and is occurring.
And I think, you know, we all need to acknowledge that when that's occurring as well. When people are trying, even if you know, it seems like they still have a long way to go. I think being harsh, being judgmental, doesn't help the situation. Being there to offer guidance, opinion, perspective, that's important. I just see too much condemnation over things that you know, are still works in progress. We have to help the progress along and make sure people get it. I don't know, having an us versus them mentality, I just don't think is helpful.
No.
Unless, you know, you have really egregious situations like what we saw today. That's definitely an us versus them situation. I have no problem with that. But.
Well, forcing these things. I mean, you know, it's got to be – that's a kind of a tall order. Like, it's a ridiculous expectation that some people, whether it's a generational thing or people with that are not exposed to other communities – people of color or people that are not like you in whatever way, you know, I think that's absolutely, you know, you have like you know, common courtesy and you know, treating others the way you expect to be treated. But, you know, beyond that, there is time. It takes time, and people have to hear you know, about these things like bias and so on to try it on, to see in their own actions, you know, where they can improve and grow. But we have to realize there's going to be half steps. There's going to be missteps. You know, we laugh at, I think, a lot of the corporate communications because it is often used as, you know, topics in branding and in advertising. And we laugh when companies are sort of falling over themselves, whether it's either a reaction or it is some sort of unprompted attempt at influencing culture or commenting on culture. But you know, those things are important. Those are a part of changing attitudes and overall growth in society. So funny as they are, like, you know, that they're speaking to sentiments and to attitudes that we need in other small ways, but trying to force it in one particular way or another isn't, you're not listening enough. You know, you kind of see where people are at and approach things and expose people to things that maybe they hadn't thought of before or had the opportunity to embrace.
Yeah, I mean, it's all part of the dialogue, and we have to keep the dialogue going and encourage discourse. That's something that we all need work on. Now, this is another issue that happened in the last week. That was the issue of the national anthem at football games, where the NFL came up with the brilliant idea to fine players if they don't stand up for the national anthem. And if they if they want to protest, they can do it in the locker room where nobody can see them. Yeah. And this is all based on the idea that kneeling is disrespectful. How is it that kneeling is considered disrespectful? You kneel when you pray to God, you know? You kneel when you propose marriage. Seems like a lot more respectful than just standing up blindly. You know, if you kneel, you got to get up again. It's more work, actually, and some people have bad knees, especially football players. So it's really bizarre to me that is considered disrespectful. It seems to me that is the ultimate respect, because you're being somewhat contemplative. You're thinking. You're basically not just blindly following. I think that is what the national anthem should be all about. But what we are seeing instead is backlash to people that object to this. And once again, my favorite person, Representative Peter King, who represents Long Island, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. He said on Saturday that it was disgraceful for the chairman of the New York Jets to say that he would pay fines imposed by the NFL for team members who kneel during the national anthem. I thought that was incredible that the chairman of the New York Jets said, players, if you kneel, you won't be fined. I will pay the fine. That's just, to me, incredible. Now, what Representative King said, he said he was encouraged that Johnson, Christopher Johnson, the chairman, was saying that he was encouraging a movement premised on lies versus police. Listen to this. Would he support all player protest? Would he pay fines of players giving Nazi salutes or spew racism? It's time to say goodbye to Jets. Wow. So basically, he has just equated football players kneeling on the field in quiet contemplation with Nazis. Yeah, people who are protesting injustice. That to you is the same as genocide, as murderous, horrible people that killed millions. That to you is the same thing. How is this guy still in office? How is this guy not living through hell every moment of every day, just like Roseanne will be? What he is saying here is just so incredibly horrible and dangerous, really, because he is in a position of power. And to say that you don't have the right to protest, you don't have the right to stand up against injustice, is a horrible thing. Should not be tolerated. And yet this guy persists saying horrible things like this. It's certainly not the first time. That's why he's somebody that I enjoy quoting so often. But yeah, he gets away with it constantly.
He's a blowhard and just really lost the argument, I think, because he brought up Nazis. I mean, that's the comparison he uses. It's kind of proves that it, you know, it's an invalid argument. I mean, you can't really come back from that. But yeah, yet we listen to him.
You shouldn't be disrespecting the American flag no matter who you are, he says. And this, to me, this is the ultimate disrespect of the American flag by not allowing people or by penalizing people for expressing themselves. It's not disrespecting the flag. It's disrespecting the system that props itself up with the flag. They are the hypocrites. They are the ones that disrespect the flag in their actions. He continues, to me, the people who are kneeling down accusing the police of misconduct, that's not something that fits within reasonable protest. Oh, yeah, reasonable protest. If I owned an NFL team, I'd say either stand up or not be on the team. And who was it who said maybe these people shouldn't even be in the country? That was Trump, wasn't it? Trump said, our damn president said that.
Yeah.
This is why people kneel, because of statements like this, because of fascism like this. That is what this is. And I'll tell you, kneeling is minor compared to the anger that I could see people expressing if this kind of crap continues. You know, we're not talking about burning American flags. I can certainly see why people would want to do that if they thought that these were the people representing it. They are not. They are not the people representing the flag or democracy or fairness or equality or any of that. And, you know, there's, I hope the protests continue, but there's other ways to protest, too. If there isn't massive kneeling when the NFL opens up, whenever that is, you know, you can stand and raise your fist in the air. Be on the field. You're standing. What are you going to say now? If you raise your fist in the air, you're going to get fined. They're going to have to keep adding things on to this rule. And I just think that I know NFL players have a lot to worry about, you know, winning games and all that, but let's be a little creative here and think of other ways to really annoy these people. And the fact that they are so annoyed that they're saying things like this and passing rules like this and fining people, it means it's working. Just like, you know, the boycott Israel thing, they get so upset, they try to pass laws against it. It means it's working. So by all means, when injustice rears its ugly head, keep doing what you're doing and see how they react. They'll just get more and more unreasonable.
Yeah, and it's this sacred thing. I mean, they're so offended that people have sullied the sport, their religion, second only to Christianity. And I think it's a form of social control, like you said, fascist. But it really is also this sort of unattainability of whiteness and bias for supremacy that, like, you know, you have to do this to conform to our identity. And I think there is like this. This undertone of, you know, how sacrosanct the flag is, and sort of redefining of allegiance and what freedom is, and tying it up with war, of all things, and I get it, but it's it is a gross exaggeration, and expecting people to conform in this way and actually imposing this upon a league like football, something that's already struggling, it's really silly. And like you said, it's like sort of this moving target where it will never be enough. Like, no matter how, if you're black and you're a player, it will never be enough. However you showed sort of a dissatisfaction with the system that that you're in, it is this imposing of control that you must act and behave this way or we won't pay you.
Right.
You know, and kind of moving the line constantly. I mean, it's the same sentiment as like voter suppression and that kind of thing, that we're in charge. This is how you act. This is how you'll never be enough, but this will help. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you look this way and you show that you, and all they want is this blind allegiance and non-questioning of the flag and authority as a trope for whiteness. I mean, that's it. They want their black players to respect this white emblem that they've established, that this system and this governance represents in this time. Their regime needs to be validated by the other, right? That they subscribe to this control in the form of conforming and not resisting and not standing out and not providing a counterpoint to, you know, the kind of injustice that actually exists, acknowledging the real America. They want the veneer, and they're not getting it. And this, I hope this league implodes.
And all they're doing is kneeling. Look at all you got out of them just kneeling. But that's, you know, that's, it's just a simple, silent statement, an acknowledgement of the things Kyle is saying the things that they experience on a daily basis that we can't even possibly imagine. We can try, but we can never actually get there. So, you know, how about showing some respect for individuals expressing themselves? And I'll tell you, I'm not going to stand for the national anthem for a very long time until people are treated fairly in situations like this. This is insane. And yeah. Have people like Peter King walking around saying vile rhetoric like that unanswered, that to me is more offensive than anything else, and really needs to be dealt with. Okay, well, we have other things that are a bit upsetting as well. You hear about this this new video game that is being released called Active Shooter, set to be released June 6th on Steam, which, as we know, is a gaming platform owned by Valve Corporation. They're a video game developer based in Washington State. The game was developed by Revived Games, published by a Russian company called Acid, which plans to sell the game between $5 and $10 on the Steam platform. Marketing materials for the game say players will be able to choose between portraying a SWAT team member responding to a shooting or portraying an actual shooter whose objective is to hunt and destroy inside a school. This is how the father of one of the victims of the Parkland shooting responded. It's disgusting that Valve Corporation is trying to profit from the glamorization of tragedies affecting our schools across the country. Keeping our kids safe is a real issue affecting our communities and is in no way a game. This company should face the wrath of everyone who cares about school and public safety, and it should start immediately. Do not buy this game for your kids or any other game made by this company. I can't agree more. It's quite clear that the company is not going to be prevented from doing this, nor should they be, because, you have the right to do offensive things, but they should feel the pain for doing this. And I think they will. But I have a suggestion for them. All right. If you really believe in freedom of expression, you can do what you wish. Can someone develop a game where you shoot up the House of Representatives? I would like to see that. I'd like to see a game where you walk into the Capitol building and just mow everybody down, all right? And then maybe have other buildings, too, in Washington, D.C. Go to the White House, go to the Senate, and just walk around. No specific people, just random people, you know, because that would be wrong if you targeted real people. But you're just walking through the hallway shooting. Good fun for everybody. You won't do that? You won't put out a game like that? Why? Why won't you put out a game where you walk into the House of Representatives and start shooting? What's the difference? What's the difference between that and walking into a school and doing this? Both fictitious? Both first-person shooters?
Both?
Sorry.
Gun-free zones?
Gun-free zones? Well, schools are not as much of gun-free zones as Congress is, because some schools allow guns, which is ridiculous, but yeah. I would like to know. I'd like to know why they won't do something like that. And maybe they will.
Or what about hotels?
What about hotels?
Well, you have a whole game where you shoot up hotels.
Okay, that game probably exists. I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, maybe like an international hotel,
okay,
in D.C.
I think you're missing the point here.
Or Vegas. You could be up at Mandalay Bay.
Okay,
you're
citing news now. You're mixing news with fiction.
Oh.
All right, so basically, walking into Congress, all right, that's what I'm talking about. Will they be daring enough to do that? Or will they fear the wrath of the people in charge of Congress who will react to this? Because, you know, the only people reacting to this right now are school kids and their parents and those gun control nuts. So get back to me. Let me know, you know, will such a game, and if you're a game developer, develop such a game. See if Steam distributes it. I'd like to know.
So just locations?
Apparently. I don't know.
Yeah, buildings.
I mean, I might be completely wrong on this. Maybe they have first-person shooter games for every building imaginable. But somehow I doubt it. Somehow I think that, you know, when the NRA holds a rally and the president or vice president show up, they can't have their guns. Now, why? If guns keep you so safe, why can't you walk into the White House with your gun? Explain that to me. Because somebody might be in danger. That's our point. That's been our point all along, that having people walking around with guns all the time puts people in danger, and our lives are every damn bit as important as people who are in those offices.
I wonder, has there historically ever been a shooting in the House of Representatives? Like, when did they establish that this was dangerous? They probably figured it out a long time ago, you know, way back, even when they had the, like, muzzle-loading muskets and stuff, that, like, maybe if we're going to debate, if we're going to have a government with differing views and people coming around representing different areas, perhaps we should just check the weaponry at the door and then, you know, go have our discussion because of X, Y, or Z crazy, you know, person that was upset about the Stamp Act or some, you know, thing that happened to them on their farm out in wherever. You know, they, you know, brought their pitchfork or what, you know, thought they could have expressed their grievance, you know, in an irate display in the House of Representatives, at which point they said, you know what? If this institution's going to last, if it's going to be around, maybe we should just eliminate the weaponry at the door so that we don't constantly have to close down and clean up these kinds of messes, you know? Anyway, that probably would influence or had influenced the existence of these kinds of violent games, whether it's a political theme or I don't know what you would call a school shooting themed shooter game.
You know, I just looked this up, actually. There was a Capitol shooting incident in 1954. It was an attack on March 1st, 1954, by four Puerto Rican nationalists. They shot 30 rounds from semi-automatic pistols from the Ladies' Gallery, which is a balcony for visitors of the House of Representatives chamber in the United States Capitol. They wanted to highlight their desire for Puerto Rican independence from U.S. rule. So that maybe that has something to do with, but, you know, it kind of shows, yeah, that sort of thing can happen. That's why you don't allow it.
Let's just note that Puerto Rico is yet to become independent since.
That's true, too.
Just putting it out there.
It doesn't help your cause. The nationalists were immediately arrested in Washington, D.C., the next morning in Puerto Rico, the insular police raided the home of the president of the Nationalist Party with guns and tear gas. I don't think anyone was hurt, though. I'm looking this over, and they're not mentioning anything about people being actually hit. So it might have been just a symbolic firing of weaponry inside the Capitol. But you can't do that anymore. And for good reason.
And good luck finding a game that allows you to, you know, express your pent-up desire to do
this.
Well,
now that you say that, maybe there can be a game developed for Puerto Rican independence where you shoot up the Capitol. There. See,
and it's
now you have
historically accurate.
You have history, yes. Go back.
Got
and
it.
Go back in time.
Well, we'll definitely read letters and any updates on that if anyone out there has some things to follow up, write us, otw2600.com.
Yes, and speaking of going back in time, I'd like to go back in time to the 1700s, because this keeps coming up all the time, and, you know, we see it referenced incessantly when we have these discussions, these arguments, these debates, all about the Second Amendment, all about the Constitution, all about what the Founding Fathers wanted and didn't want, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, you know, I'm not mad at the people that that espouse a particular position, all right? Because they're doing a pretty good job, you know. They're arguing their points and they're getting people to believe them. The people I'm mad at are the people who should be debating them and aren't. The people who buy into what they're saying and accept it, you know. Years ago, I can confess this. Years ago, at this very campus, we had some fun. Because in college you have fun. And we distributed a bunch of fake memos where basically we instituted policy. And one of the fake memos said that there would be a curfew on campus at, I think, 9 o'clock. Everybody had to be in their dorms. And we distributed that memo to the campus newspaper. And the memo basically said that we're reinstituting this this curfew, which took place back in 1968 and has not been implemented since. This was back in the 80s, I think we did this. And the newspaper went and printed it. Now, of course, it was revealed that this was fake, that the university was not imposing a curfew. So they had to print a retraction. They had to print a correction saying, yeah, it was a fake memo. We're not instituting a curfew. The curfew was in place in 1968, but has not been implemented, except there was never a curfew. Basically, we rewrote history and made something that didn't exist, and that turned into fact. So that's kind of what's happening here, is that something is being said as fact that is not true. And in focusing on a bigger point, you sort of let that one go and say, yeah, okay, that really happened, but that's, you know, let's argue the point. And that's what the Democrats, that's what the liberals have done with the Second Amendment. They have chosen to accept the right wing's interpretation of it and just debate whether or not the whole thing is smart, the whole thing is a good idea, when in actuality, it doesn't say what people are saying it says. And those are people on both sides of the equation. Now, I'd like to demonstrate this simply by going over some of the amendments, some of the other amendments. Let's look at the First Amendment, okay? Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, semicolon, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, semicolon, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Pretty straightforward. Congress shall make no law concerning establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Basically, laying out all the different things that Congress will make no law against. Abridging the freedom of speech, press, it's all right there. Pretty easy to understand. I'm going to skip the second one because we're going to come right back to that. I'm going to look at a couple others. My favorite, the third amendment. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. So basically, it means that no soldier can come and occupy your house unless you say it's okay. And that applies when we're not at war, which we generally have not been. And when we are, in a manner prescribed by law. It's a weird one. It's a very strange amendment that has not really been talked about a lot. But the Fourth Amendment has. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. In other words, unreasonable search will not be tolerated, and it's done a pretty good job outlining where this will not happen and how it will not happen.
Yeah, it's basically saying on someone's oath, you better be darn certain and be willing to put your oath, whether it is oath of being a judge or whatever authority granted to you, is on the line if you're wrong. So you better be certain if you're going to say that it is reasonable.
All right, let's look at the Fifth Amendment. Now, that no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, semicolon, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, semicolon, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, semicolon, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. It's a lot there, and a lot of semicolons. And every semicolon means that the next phrase after that is somewhat independent. So you have the private property not being taken for public use without compensation. You have not being compelled to be a criminal witness against oneself. Basically, every one of these is independent and somewhat separate, though related. Okay? Now, let's look at the Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. There are no semicolons there, so therefore, none of those phrases stands independently. Yet, what everybody always focuses on is the last part only, which is just separated by a comma, meaning it's part of the sentence and is related. It's a necessary part of the rest of the sentence, and the rest of the sentence is a necessary part of the phrase. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. But look at the rest of the sentence. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, grammatically, it's kind of, you know, not exactly the smoothest train in the fleet. But the meaning to me is pretty clear, that as part of a well-regulated militia, which is necessary for the security of a free state, people shall have the right to keep and bear arms. But they are part of this well-regulated militia. The well-regulated part is what we seem to have forgotten about. No regulations whatsoever. You don't have to be part of a militia. You can just stockpile as many weapons as you want. Now, if we treated any of the other amendments in the same way, let's take the fourth one, for instance. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue. Now, imagine if I just took the part of that that I liked in between commas. No warrants shall issue. That's what the Fourth Amendment stands for. No warrants shall issue. I can do as I please because you can't issue any warrant against me. Period. It's the same thing. It's not separated by a semicolon. It's separated by a comma. It's a phrase within a sentence, and I'm choosing to only focus on that.
Yeah, you're cherry picking, and then a literal interpretation would mean it applies to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Or look at the fifth. You know, let's look at the last part of the fifth. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Well, I could just say, nor shall private property be taken for public use, period. You know, that's it. That's all I want to focus on. And there you go. That's my interpretation of the Fifth Amendment. Now, you see, if it said what people on both the right and the left seem to think it says, there would be a semicolon there. It would be a well-regulated militia is necessary. I would change that sentence. Being necessary to security of a free state. You can't even do it with that sentence. But basically, you would have to put a semicolon there and say, nor shall the right of the people to keep and bear arms be infringed. In other words, make that an independent clause. That's something that stands on its own, and it's not dependent on the rest of the sentence. It doesn't say that. That is not what it says. There are no semicolons. There are no nors. It's all part of the same thing. It's a clumsy phrase. I will grant that, but it's very clear. It's right there. So, you know, I think it's time that people who are for gun control stop being represented, misrepresented as anti-Second Amendment, because as far as I can see, they are more pro-Second Amendment than these pro-gun people are, because they understand the actual meaning of the phrase. We need to say that more, though. We need to come out and say this is what it actually is saying.
You can't have a imaginary, well-regulated militia in your head and just have whatever gun you want and somehow cite that amendment as justification.
But you can understand why people would want to do that, right? I mean, I do understand that, okay? I get what people want. They want to be able to collect whatever cool devices that happen to be weapons. Okay, fine. You want toys. You want to be able to do what you please. But don't point to the Constitution as justification for it, because it doesn't say that there. And when you live in a society, you have to kind of balance what you want with what is healthy. You know, I would love to have a tank. I would love to have a spaceship. I'd love to have all kinds of things. But I do recognize there are some regulations and some balances that you have to keep in mind when you're pursuing your passions.
Is it a brash generalization to point out irony in the illiterate folks that might make these citations, maybe not being best at grammar?
I don't.
Yeah. Your whole argument is based on grammar.
Okay, but like I said, the sentence is clumsy. It's based on an old way of speaking. And I don't think the people who are interpreting in this way are necessarily illiterate. A lot of people are simply listening to what they're told over and over again and believing something that is just not true. All you have to do is look at the phrasing, compare it to the other ones, and you'll see the point. All right? You know, there is something there about keeping and bearing arms, but it's not what is being portrayed. And I just wish Democrats and liberals and gun reformists, people who are for gun regulation would say this, would confront this head on and say, we believe in the Second Amendment. Do you?
Yeah. No, I'm just pointing out that cherry picking is very convenient to the narrative, and especially with this sort of loose or liberal interpretation of the grammar just in that amendment alone. If you're able to rationalize that, you know, without respecting the rules you're speaking to, just in the reading of it, you can then kind of make a leap to this convenient cherry-picked phrase that the right of the people to keep and bear arms.
Yeah, well, it's time that that we take back what we are accused of.
It's a good point.
Of not, yeah, I think so. You know, being an English major, I kind of notice things like this, and well, semicolons and commas is a difference.
It also, I think, allows you to avoid the traps, I think, of comparing guns from the such and such time to now, and then this kind of caliber, this many rounds, this speed, this, that. You know, you get into all this technical stuff that I think gun aficionados love, because then they nerd out on, oh, well, yeah, he's so absurd. Yeah, he had 10 rounds and seven.
And that is fine. That is fine. I respect that.
They love that.
And people are they should learn as much as they can about these things. There is responsibility that goes along with that. It even says so right there in the damn Constitution. Well-regulated militia. Just remember that part of it. If we're going to point to the Constitution, and let's figure out a way that people get what they want.
Well, and look at that part of it. Where are we failing in a regulated militia? Where is the regulated militia?
Well, that's the thing. We kind
let's
of forgot
talk
about
it. You know, where are they? How are they regulating? Uh-huh. Whether it be conforming to some federal statutes, or are they imposing their own regulations? And then what are their attitudes as a regulated militia on all the unregulated militias that are in people's heads? This psychosis of gun ownership and prevalence of these weapons. How does the organized militia feel about that, and do they feel those people are amenable to whatever organizing they would do in an emergency? It's a very good point, and it is not the former part of that amendment is just not discussed, and I think we need more reporting on how that is implemented and in actually practice, because it is what we need versus this sort of Wild West.
Right, right.
That other interpretation is.
We'll continue this conversation when future weeks come by, I guess, because we're out of time now. I'd love to hear what people have to say about this. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. Remember, keep questioning things and asking questions and challenging wherever possible. We'd love to hear from you, whether you agree with us or not. And that's going to just about do it for this week's Off the Wall. We will be back next week, and stay tuned for Finn coming up next here on WUSB. Good night.
I've been taught to respect my elders and behave. Even if when they were young, they sold slaves. Truth and understanding is what I crave in the land of the thief, home of the slave. Turn your page to a brief demonstration. That's now in 90, it's strictly information I'm giving. Teaching on a regular basis. Today's lecture is about the races. We're not out to exaggerate or diss them, but show the symptoms and facts of racism. Understand, the races ain't equal. There's about 5 different types of racist people. First of the 5 different types of cases is the individual brought up racist. Here you have young men and women brought up in the great white way opinion. This opinion introduced by the parent to the civilized becomes transparent. A civilized man could look through the faces, make the analysis and see the races. Number 2 case which all must hear is the individual racist out of fear. Here you have people that fear the African and conjure up new ways of trapping them. Number 3 is the unconscious racist. Not knowing they're racist, they invade your spaces. They say, I'm not a racist, I'm not a bigot. Yet they allow it to go on and won't admit it. Number 4 is the money racist. The one that used the topics of sheer economics. They say, owning a business isn't for the black man. He don't want that, yet they went and took his land. Damn. That's like a rock in a hard place. You don't have your land yet, this ain't your space. America was built by every other race except the European. It runs this place. What a waste. America's doomed to be overthrown by the righteous real soon. But last but not least, racial prejudice is the black man speaking out of ignorance. Whitey this and Ching Chow that is not how the intelligent man acts. You can't blame the whole white race for slavery, cause this ain't the case. A large sum of white people died with black, trying hard to fight racial attack. The media wants you to think that no whites really fought and died for civil rights. But once we have a true sense of history, you'll see this too is a mystery. If black and white didn't argue the most, they could clearly see the government screwing them both.
My friends, this is Finn. This is Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB in Stony Brook. Tonight, we have Byron Isaacs with us at the 7:15 moment. But you want to hear some music from him first, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. That's a Summer from Byron Isaacs' brand new release, Disappearing Man. Byron's going to be on the air with us in just a few moments. This is another one from the new record called Shadows. Byron Isaacs right here, WUSB Stony Brook.
Nothing familiar remains. Will always have its moment.